Welcome to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show podcast with my co-host Chris Graham. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you tuning in each week or several times a week as we're throwing several podcasts at you. Want to promo next week's podcast. We're going to have a special series with the four first African-American football players at Virginia, something that changed history, a significant role in UVA football program history. Talking about Stanley Land, Kent Merritt, Harrison Davis, and John Rainey. Al Groh will introduce our series. He was their freshman coach back in those days. And what a special story. We'll have a podcast each day with a different one of the players to tell their history and how they got to UVA and what they did afterward. And should be something special for all Virginia fans to enjoy. But let's get to this week's, tonight's show, and a special guest, one of my favorite guys of all time, just a terrific human being, was an incredible football player, and now carving a niche in Hollywood as an actor, director, producer, writer, can do it all. Let's introduce and welcome Thomas Q. Jones. Former UVA All-American running back, former All-Pro running back. He's done it all. Thomas, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jerry. Chris, thank you so much for having me on, and thanks for that introduction. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for taking some time out to join us and talk some Wahoo football and some acting and some other things that you're into. This is a special week, probably for all you guys that played in 1999, Thomas, because that's when Virginia played at BYU in Provo for the first time. Right. BYU was a pretty darn good football program under Lavelle Edwards, and so was Virginia under George Welsh. Virginia will be venturing out to Provo this Saturday for a 10:15 p.m. start. And if I was with you guys in 99 on that trip to BYU, and I wasn't that a 10:15 start as well?
Yeah, yes, it was. It was a late game. And I think it was an ESPN2 game because my family, I remember they stayed up late watching it. That was an incredible trip. That was one of the best team trips and games that I ever played in. I had never been to Utah before. I had actually never been that far west before. so that was an experience. And just, I remember playing BYU. I didn't know much about BYU. You know, obviously I knew of them growing up and some of the great players that they had, but in regards to their actual football program, and then just Utah was just really foreign to me and a lot of the other guys on the team. So when we saw that we were playing BYU at BYU on the schedule before the season, we were all kind of anticipating that game. It was an incredible experience, to say the least. Just the anticipation, knowing how far away it was and just going into it. Usually when you play an away game, it's somewhere that you've either played the team before, if it's an ACC team, or it's a team that you are at least familiar with the vicinity of the team. But this was unique.
It truly was. And it was unique also in the fact that it was a shootout it would be a common Saturday these days in college football where the scores are 45-40. But in 1999, that was a little bit of a wild shootout game, but that you guys prevailed in up and down the field all night. And I've talked to several BYU fans and gotten some Twitter messages from them over the years about that game. And the thing that stands out to them, other than the fact that Jerton Evans ended their dream by intercepting a pass in the end zone late, maybe the last series of the game. Mm-hmm. But they remember Thomas Jones, and they remember that they still haven't stopped you.
that was, like I said, we just didn't know what to expect. You know, we saw them on film. They were a really, really good football team. They were, you know, really, really good on offense. They could score quick. They had a really good quarterback, really, really athletic receivers, and they had a really good young running back. I think his name was Lucas Staley. I think he was a freshman, big guy, strong kid. And then on defense, they were tough and big. And they had a couple of, I think, All-American candidates in the secondary and a linebacker. That was really good. I think his name was Rob Morris. Rob Morris, was that his name?
I believe so,
I think he was a Mike linebacker, tough kid. And so we watched them all week on film, and they would fly around the ball. And they, you know, you could tell they had good team chemistry. So we knew it was going to be a tough game, and we were going to have to run the ball. And I remember once we got into pregame warmups, I wore a visor on my helmet, on my shield, on my helmet. And probably about 10 minutes into warmups, I couldn't breathe. And that's when the altitude out there really, really hit me. And so that was one of the first games that I went to our equipment manager, and I said, "Hey, man, you have to take this visor off. I can't breathe." You know, like,
and so that's the problem.
So yeah, we took the visor off, and I remember too, it was really cool because we had a chance to wear all white uniforms, and you know, Coach Welsh was so just super superstitious and just so conservative that we were shocked that we were wearing all white, especially a game like that. You know, a team we had never played before, all the way in Utah. It would seem like we wear the white jerseys and blue pants, but we had all white. Like, okay, you know, it was cool. You know, a different you know, change of uniform gave us a different kind of vibe, different kind of energy. And that game was a shootout. You know, but for some reason, I think because it was so foreign, it was so new. It was such a kind of breath of fresh air for us to kind of play a totally different team in a totally different proximity that, you know, it kind of rejuvenated us, especially on offense and especially me. I felt really, really excited to play there. I felt really excited to be able to get a chance to play a totally different team and kind of really see, you know, I guess how good I was in this type of environment. And it was an incredible game. I think I ended up with about 215 yards or 5 yards, something like that, and a couple of touchdowns. I know I had a nice counter that I cut all the way back and went about 40 yards, 50 yards. But I just remember being a shootout. It was a fun game. I mean, obviously you want to, you know, you don't want to be in a game that close, but just it was an emotional roller coaster, back and forth, back and forth. We score, they score, we score, they score. And it was big plays. The whole game was big plays. I mean, that the highlights from that game on both teams, honestly, were you could probably put a nice highlight tape of that game and probably have the majority of the plays of the game was highlights. I mean, it was incredible.
Certainly could for you because you ran the ball 35 times that night. 35 times for 210 yards and two touchdowns, as you said. Virginia had 432 yards total offense. You had almost half of that. So now I know why the BYU people don't like to hear the name Thomas Jones.
I remember the offensive line was just coming off the ball, and you know, they were just opening up holes. And you know, John St. Clair, Nola Montaigne, all those guys. I remember Demetrius Dotson came in and had some really big catches. Kevin Coffey. You know, Anthony Southern had a couple of big plays. Arlen Harris was a freshman at the time. He came in and had some good plays. I mean, everyone just contributed. It was a total team effort. You know, I was able to break off some runs and wear them down a little bit, but it was definitely a total team effort. On defense, we made plays, interceptions, like you said, Jerton Evans. I think Tim Sproul picked up a lateral and scored on that. It was an incredible game. Incredible.
It really was. I don't know if you'll be watching this Saturday or night or not. It's pretty late game, obviously. But have you been able to see much of this Virginia team this season? They're putting up some incredible offensive numbers. And this is a pretty big game. That both BYU and Virginia are 6-2.
Yeah, I have. I've always keep up with Virginia, even though I'm busy and, you know, moving around a lot. You know, thank God for social media. I'm always able to keep up with them. Matter of fact, if I can't see the game, if it's not a national game, or if I can't get to ACC Network for one of their games, I know I can always follow you and the Virginia football page, and I can keep up with the play-by-play. You know, I keep mostly your page, to be honest, on Twitter. But, you know, I think they're having a great year. I know they struggled a little bit in the top of the year, I guess, trying to kind of figure out who they were. And it seems like they've come into their own. I mean, their offense is, I mean, it just explosive. They have so many weapons on offense. And obviously that quarterback is, to me, I don't see how he's not a Heisman front runner. I mean, he's proven to make big plays against every defense. And I think that's a sign of a Heisman caliber player. It's, you know, are you doing it against the teams that are, you know, having great seasons and have great records and are ranked high, you know, and their defense is solid and they're making plays as well. They seem to have a really good chemistry, you know, their team. It looks like they're having fun out there. So it makes it fun to watch.
Yeah, they've got a lot of playmakers. I think you'd really like Brendan Armstrong. He's your kind of guy. He's a very fiery guy on the field, a good leader. He's not afraid to get in his teammates' faces and try to inspire them. Has no quit in him at all. And he's the kind of quarterback that would just rather run over you than to take a slide. So I know you would appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I love his energy. He wants to be great. And you can't help but respect people like that. And he makes other people around him better. And that's what I really appreciate about him. And he's accountable. He's put the team on his shoulders. And, you know, when you have that kind of example, people around you, you know, you have to make a choice. Either you're going to step up or you're not. He kind of puts people on Front Street. And like you said, those are the kind of players that I enjoy playing with. I enjoy watching play. That's how I played, you know, coming from my high school in Virginia. You know, we won 26, 27 straight games, two back-to-back state championships. So when I came to Virginia, I was used to winning. I didn't want to lose a game. I didn't want to lose to the defense in practice. I didn't want to lose anything, you know, and I really see that in that kid. He's got a lot of heart. And anybody that can play like that and that can rally guys around him like that is somebody that I'll always respect.
For those who are newbies and not familiar with some of Virginia football history, and for those who are and just enjoy hearing it again, just a brief education on Thomas Jones. Played at Virginia 1996 to 1999 and ended his UVA career with 8 ACC records and 15 UVA records. Was the all-time leading rusher at Virginia, 3,998 yards. Broke Tiki's record. He was a consensus All-American, finished 8th in the Heisman voting. Should have been higher than that. I voted him. I gave him my first place vote. 12 seasons in the NFL, Arizona, Tampa, New York Jets, Chicago, Kansas City. Retired among the top 25 leading rushers in NFL history. He's currently 26, and you've been retired for a while. He's a member of the 10,000 Yards Rushing Club, nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which we hope he will eventually get into. And back at Virginia, he earned his bachelor's degree in only 3 years. And if I recall, Thomas, George Ross told me you never missed a practice.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to not miss a practice through injury or being sick. I didn't even realize it, to be honest, until after my senior year, and I was getting ready to get drafted, and Virginia, they were nice enough to make this plaque for me that had, you know, some of my accomplishments, and at the very bottom it said fewest practices missed, 0. I was like, I didn't even realize that I hadn't missed a practice. I didn't even think about it because I hadn't missed a practice in high school, and I had missed a game in high school, so I never missed anything. So to me, it wasn't even something that that I thought about. It was just, you know, we have practice, we have a game, and I didn't want to miss anything because I wanted to be a part of everything. So that when you look back on it now, you know, that this many years later, it's kind of like really blessed and fortunate to not be injured, to miss any games or practice at that time. And also just the work ethic that was, you know, instilled in me by my parents. You know, my mother and my father were coal miners in southwestern Virginia, a small town called Big Stone Gap. So I'm from Virginia too. And they didn't miss work. So, you know, I got to give half the credit to them because, you know, they were the example for me as I kind of went through my football career.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
Update us, if you will, on your family, because I know the Virginia football family and then an extended family, the fans really had a lot of respect for your parents and your siblings. I know some of your sisters went to UVA. If not all of them, but just, and so a lot of people went to school with them as well. Just update us on where they all are now.
Yeah. Everyone is, thank you, Jerry. Everyone is doing great. And my mother and father, they're great. You know, you know, my father still watches Virginia. He's still just as excited about the games as if I were playing. We're a Virginia family. My mother, she's great. She doesn't watch football as much. I think for my mother watching football, it was a little more nerve-wracking for her to watch, you know, because she just, you know, she wanted to make sure that we didn't get injured and that we were okay. All my sisters are doing well. You know, I have five sisters. They're all doing well. Three of my sisters graduated from Virginia after me, and they're all doing great. We have, you know, a Virginia family, so. No, it's incredible. I was there in 96 and I had a sister that came there 3 years after me. So I was a fourth year and she was a first year. And then when she was a fourth year, my other sister enrolled there and she was a first year. And then 5 years later, my youngest sister enrolled there. So it's an 11-year span between me and my youngest sister of UVA. Students from the Jones family, and they're all doing well. My brother's doing well. He played at University of Notre Dame and played in the NFL 7-8 years. And so, you know, they're all doing well, you know, have some nieces and nephews, and maybe there'll be future Wahoos too.
That's right. I remember Virginia tried hard to get Julius to follow in your footsteps and he ended up in South Bend. You have a bet with him on the upcoming Virginia.
it's funny because, you know, me and my brother have never really been in competition like that. You know, it's we're just fans of the game. You know, obviously I want Virginia to win. He wants Notre Dame to win, but, I always have a soft spot for Notre Dame because actually Notre Dame was my first choice. When I was high school. Yeah. And honestly, after my junior season, I committed to Notre Dame. That was where I was going. And so through my whole entire senior year, Virginia was definitely always an option. But in regards to just the team that I felt and the school that I felt was the best for me at that time was Notre Dame. So I was always a big football fan of Notre Dame and just the mystique and all that until I went on my visit to Virginia. And I only took two visits. And the Virginia visit, I went because I wanted to make sure that, you know, I kind of showed respect. You know, they recruited me from the time I was a sophomore in high school. Coach Welsh had come to my house and, I'm from Virginia. So I wanted to show some, you know, show respect and give them a visit. And it turned out to be one of the best experiences of my life. And, you know, I met Tiki Barber, who was my host, and Rondé Barber and Anthony Poindexter, all three were my hosts on my visits. And I just felt at home. I mean, it was one of the best weekends ever. And then I, you know, changed my mind. And that's how I ended up coming to Virginia. So with all that being said, Notre Dame, I'm still a Notre Dame fan, but I won't be a fan of Notre Dame when they're playing Virginia for sure.
That's cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool that those three guys were your hosts. I don't think they could have found three better guys to try to help change your mind.
It worked. It definitely worked.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And a lot of people don't know it, but when you're not spending time in Hollywood, you have a home in Miami. And tell our listeners out there who some of your neighbors are and how you guys hang out together in South Florida.
Yeah, well, it's I think when we played in I played in two bowl games in Miami. I played in the Carquest Bowl my freshman year. And in my senior year, I played in the Micron PC Bowl here in Miami. And I remember there was I saw this written somewhere. It may have been on one of the football programs or something. It said, who's in Miami? So I think that's appropriate for this situation too. Who's in Miami? There's a lot of Virginia Wahoos in Miami that actually live down here. Terry Kirby is here, legendary running back at UVA in Virginia. John St. Clair, All-American center at UVA and high school legend, Virginia. So there's a lot of Virginia guys down here in Miami. I guess it's like the warm weather. But yeah, we're all connected. I mean, we live 10, 15 minutes away from each other. I actually work out at Terry Kirby's gym. He owns a gym down here. And so it's great to go in that gym, and he's training guys, and his son goes to that same gym. And, you know, I looked up to Terry from the time I was, you know, in elementary school and then in high school, because I kept hearing his name as I was breaking some records in high school. Every time I break a record, it would be Terry Kirby's record. So it was, you know, I felt this connection to him even before I even met him. And then I had a chance to meet him, I think in Charlottesville when I was at UVA one time, briefly. And then I had a chance to play with him in the NFL in Tampa in 2003. So there's a couple of Virginia guys down here in Miami, and it's great. We all get a chance to reminisce and talk and hang out, and, you know, feels like home.
I know you and St. Clair are very tight and have been for decades.
Yeah, John was my best friend. We've been like brothers since college. Actually, on my visit, I met John by the equipment room in the locker room, and as soon as I met him, we just started talking, and you know, we just clicked. And so the next year when I enrolled, we just became really, really good friends immediately, and then. Over the course of that was 1996, and it's 2021. We lived 10 minutes from each other. We were college roommates. We played on the same team. We played in Chicago together for 2 years. We went to the Super Bowl here in Miami with the Bears. We're on the same team. Him and his wife, you know, Shannon, she's his wife from college. They met in college as well. So she's like a sister to me. So it's been incredible to be able to be that close in proximity to John and Shannon for this many years.
Chris, you got something?
Yeah, Thomas, I was going to ask about, you talked about the role of your parents in your work ethic. I was wondering how much that played into your durability. You talked about not missing a practice at UVA. I looked at your career stats. 6 years into your career, you have your first 1,000-yard season. You have five straight. You average 300 yards a carry years 6 through 10 as an NFL running back with all that punishment that a running back takes, plus your college career. Was that somewhat influenced by your parents and your upbringing?
Most definitely, Chris. And my parents, like I said, we worked in the coal mines. I'm from a very, very small town in Virginia, southwestern Virginia, towards the Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, West Virginia border. And that area is a lot of tough people there. It's it's one of those places where football and coal mining are life. two tough, obviously, spaces to be in. And so, you know, when I left home, all I knew was hard work and discipline and work ethic and doing the little things and taking the little things seriously and realizing that the little things add up to big things. And that mindset was what, you know, helped me through college. I mean, in high school, I had over 300 carries, I think, my junior year, and over 300 carries my senior year. So I think I ended up with almost 800 carries in high school. And then I think I had over 800 carries in college, and then over 2,600 carries in the NFL, just in regular season games. So, yeah, I mean, I was just bred to never quit, never give up, always finish the job. And it's that mindset, like I said, that got me to this point in my life. So I'm very grateful for my mom and my dad and the town and the area that I come from.
One other question would be, any advice for the UVA players, if they were listening, they might be listening to the podcast here. You said 10 minutes into warmups out there at BYU. I'm sure that was your first game at high altitude. You had to say, take the visor off. I can't breathe. And you had 35 carries and tough carries and also some long runs. Any advice for the UVA kids as they're getting ready for probably their first high altitude game?
Yeah, I would say be prepared for that. Don't be caught off guard, because the altitude was definitely a factor at first. But once you kind of get used to it and you get into the flow of the game, then things were kind of normalized. But yeah, that was a shock for me. You know, we heard about it all week, and it's kind of hard to prepare for that. But, you know, we heard about it all week. Coach Welsh, would one thing about Coach Welsh is he would emphasize the same thing over and over again. But sometimes, because Coach Welsh said so many different things, sometimes you just tune him out. So that was one time that we should have listened, because, you know, 10 minutes into warmups, I was like, wow, Coach Welsh was right. I can't breathe. I should have practiced without the visor on. Maybe that would have helped a little more. But yeah, be prepared for the altitude and also the crowd. Have a pretty rowdy fan base out there. And the stadium is so isolated. It's literally like someone just took a stadium and just put it in the middle of nowhere. So there's nothing around you but mountains. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful backdrop for football. Mountains and just the landscape. I wish I had a picture of that game in the stadium pregame before it got really dark and you could actually see the background. It was beautiful. But yeah, they have a pretty rowdy fan base, and their stadium gets pretty loud. So I definitely prepared for that too.
Blue Ridge Bank is the proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show and JerryRatcliffe.com. Founded in 1893, Blue Ridge Bank has more than a century of customer-based service, but is forward-thinking and features digital banking free and available 24/7. CEO Brian Plum and his team are strong supporters of UVA Athletics. And check this out. Blue Ridge Bank is home of the $100,000 jackpot drawing to one lucky customer every year. How can you beat that? Banking smarter, simplified. Blue Ridge Bank's mission is strong customer service. Make Blue Ridge Bank your bank today. Visit mybrb.com for more information.
Yeah, I remember that crowd. They were loud and raucous for sure. It will not be a quiet setting like some other places you guys play.
No, that's for sure.
You know, you look like you walked right out of the NFL still, Thomas. I guess it's because you, like you said, you work out at Terry's gym or whatever gym's available. And what has inspired you to keep working out to that degree? Because, I mean, you're built, you're cut. Most guys, when they hit their 40s, they just give up and let the belly plop out. You didn't do that.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I realized how hard it is to stay consistent when you're working out when I first retired. Because the majority of my life, I was always in some sort of sport. When I wasn't playing football in high school, I played basketball. And then when basketball season was over, I was playing baseball up until my sophomore year, and then I started running track full time. So from high school to college, where it's year round, it's the season, and then it's winter workouts, and it's spring ball, then it's summer training, and then the NFL is definitely year round. You have the season, and then you know, off season workouts, OTAs. It was nonstop from the time I was a kid all the way until I was 33. And then when I retired, 2012, that was the first time that I realized I didn't have to work out. I didn't have a workout time. I didn't have a, you know, a schedule of grueling training. And it wasn't like I was just working out for fitness. I was training for performance, which makes it even more intense. And I realized about 8 months after I retired that I could start to see my body changing. I wasn't working out as much. I was eating a little different. And you could see immediately how my metabolism slowed down and the lack of workouts and also what I was eating kind of coming to a head. And to be perfectly honest, when I started acting, that's what really rejuvenated me in regards to training and being in shape. Because if I wasn't acting, I don't think that I would have had the motivation to train as hard as I do now and be as cognizant of my weight. I think that's why a lot of guys, when they retire, it's kind of like, whew, they can finally breathe, they can eat, they can, you know, but your body reacts so much faster to that in a negative way because it's been, your body's been trained for performance for so many years that once you stop, it's almost like you have a car, you know, you have a Lamborghini and you never drive it. And all of a sudden, you know, you try to start it up and the battery won't start. You know, that's kind of what I compare it to.
When you were near the end of your NFL career, had you been thinking about acting? What interested you in that field and motivated you to give that a try?
I never thought about acting. I honestly was always interested in the entertainment industry. I had a music label for a few years when I was in the NFL because I just love music so much. And I had a few artists that I was working with and managing and producing music with and writing songs and things of that nature. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Met a lot of really cool people in the music industry, but you know, I wasn't the artist, so I wasn't the talent. And when I retired, it was weird for me to just kind of be in this kind of void space of nothing in regards to just what I was passionate about and something that I could accomplish and push myself and you know, try to, be the best at. That's what I've been done my whole life, is trying to be the best as a running back, the best team. You know, that was just something that I had always been a part of me, and I didn't have that anymore. And I was fortunate enough to meet a couple of actors here in Miami that, that persuaded me to work with them on a project. And they were some pretty high caliber actors and they were fans of mine from football. So, you know, I gave it a shot and I realized that I liked it. I liked the fact that it was something different. It was new. It was challenging. And I just dove right in. And then once I realized like this could be something that could kind of supplement football, then I moved to LA, got an apartment out there, found an agent, and then just started going on the grind. And it was beautiful too, because I was able to start over again. And I'm the type of person, I like to start from scratch and build. I prefer to have kind of my own building as opposed to just kind of, you know, taking over someone else's in so many words. So I was able to kind of start my acting career from scratch. And it kind of filled that void of football. I was around some really, really good people, really talented people, but I still had to learn. And I still had to be humble enough to realize, hey, you know, I'm taking a chance on potentially kind of not ruining my legacy, but if I do this and it doesn't work out, then more than likely I'll be known as the athlete that tried to act versus just the, you know, great running back that people knew me for. So it was a risk, to be honest. And a lot of guys, I think when they retire, they're scared of trying something new because they don't want to let go of what they've already accomplished. And they don't want to take that chance. And in reality, life is all about chances. And and opportunities and growing and evolving and trying something new and experiencing something new. So acting wasn't in my path, or I didn't see it, but it definitely was something that was necessary for me. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to find acting post-career, post-football.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's Big Time Steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
So in that sense, from 2013 to now, talk about your evolution as an actor. And also, I mean, you own your own production company and you've been on that side of the camera and that side of the business too. Talk about your evolution over the past decade.
Yeah, it's been incredible just to be away from football and be able to truly escape, because football is a very contagious lifestyle. And it consumes you, especially when you make it to the NFL and you play for over a decade at a high level. There's so much attention to detail. So you have to really dedicate yourself, your whole entire being to that game, that job, that sport. So over the last almost 10 years, to be able to escape that world and to enter a new world where I can actually honestly be human as an actor and be vulnerable as an actor and learn new concepts. And I mean, football is X's and O's. It comes down to X's and O's, but then it comes down to just heart and grit. And there's not much room to grow and evolve as a person because it's a very isolated world where acting is wide open. There's so many different stories that have to be told. There's so many different perspectives that have to be, shown. And me as an actor, I'm the vehicle for all of those stories and those perspectives. And so in order to be the vehicle, you have to be able to understand where the creators of this content are coming from, which means they may think different than you. So now you have to open your mind to other ideas. And that helped me grow. That helped me evolve as a person, because growing as a football player is totally different than growing as a person. And so it's been incredible with some of the projects that I've been able to work on, some of the characters that I've been able to play, some of the trauma in my life that I didn't deal with as a football player, because you're not supposed to show vulnerability or weakness. Whereas an actor, those are your most powerful gifts, are vulnerability and weakness, because we're all human. And that's how people connect to your character the most, is when they see a piece of them in you. And that helped me grow as a person. It was therapeutic for me. So, it's almost kind of like the last 10 years as an actor and producer has been therapy for me. Been very powerful, very, very powerful for me. And I'm very grateful to everyone that I've had a chance to work with. I have a few acting coaches, probably the two most influential coaches in my life, I would say, was George Welsh at Virginia and my acting coach, Franz Turner. They both had the exact same energy. They both had the exact same intentions. They were no nonsense. And they were almost geniuses in each of their crafts in their own way. And I responded to them equally. So I think that's why I've had so much success as an actor with Franz Turner as my acting coach, as I did with Coach Welsh as my football coach.
And now there's this neat aspect to life, maybe a strange aspect to celebrity, that there's a whole generation of people who know Thomas Jones, the actor, who don't know that Thomas Jones, the actor, was a football player. And there's also a whole generation of, there's some UVA fans who still think of Thomas Jones, the football player first. I'm sure that's an interesting dichotomy for you?
It definitely is. It definitely is. A lot of the I've been acting now for about consistently acting for about 6 years, 6-7 years. And to be honest, the majority of people that follow me now don't even know that I'm the same person, especially because I added the Q in my name. Yeah. And so they don't realize I'm the same person. And then some people, I mean, that was, think about it, you know, I retired in 2012. I was drafted in 2000. We remember those times like yesterday, but you know, you know, my nephews and niece, you know, they were 3 years old, you know, so a lot of people don't remember those days, which they wouldn't, you know, they weren't here. They weren't, you know, they weren't even, half of them weren't even born yet. So they only know me as Thomas Q. Jones from Luke Cage, or Thomas Q. Jones from Being Mary Jane, or Straight Outta Compton, or P-Valley, or, you know, Marshall Johnson. They only know that guy. And that was a weird adjustment for me as well, having to be recognized as an actor and not as a football player, because I've only been doing this for about 9-10 years total. And I played football the majority of my life. And so it's weird for someone to kind of, you're walking and someone say, hey, Comanche, you know, and it's like, turn around, or they say, Cuddy Buddy, or, you know, Maine, or whatever your name is from the show. And it's powerful because people really believe your character and they think that you're that person. So that was different, because in football, you have a helmet on. So they know you as 20 or number 6 or Jones, because they see you do your work and you're fully covered. You have a helmet on, shoulder pads. But as an actor, it's your mannerisms, it's your facial expressions, it's your energy. And so it was definitely interesting at first. I've gotten adjusted to it, but at first it was definitely a little awkward.
What's the favorite character you've played in all the TV shows and series and movies and things that you've done, Thomas?
Man, I've had so many great opportunities and memorable roles that I feel, I would have to say probably Marvel's Luke Cage, just because, you're portraying a comic book character, Comanche from a comic book, Luke Cage, and the Marvel Universe is so big and the fan base is just worldwide and global. And to be able to say that you portrayed a comic book character, first of all, is something I never in a million years thought that I would say. And then two, you know, it gives you a sense of pride that I was able to work so hard to even be considered for that role. And also I had a chance to work with Theo Rossi and Alfred Woodard, two heavyweights in Hollywood that are incredible actors. And they pushed me. They pushed me. J.O. Coker, who was the creator of the show, believed in me and gave me that opportunity. And it was an incredible experience. It was a really, really big show for Netflix, big show for Marvel. And it kind of, I think that role showed people that I was a real actor. Because a lot of times when you have someone that kind of, you know, dabbles in another industry that's known from a previous industry, people don't necessarily take them that serious. You know, I know a lot of times in my first couple of roles, people would say it was a cameo. You know, I saw you had a cameo in this or a cameo in that. And to me as an actor, it's like, no, it wasn't a cameo. I was acting. I was playing a character. But I understood that people were used to seeing me in football. So it's going to take them a while to get used to seeing me consistently as an actor. And then also having to be a good actor so they believe you. And so that role, I think, because it was a very complex character on a hit show, it gave me the chance to really showcase my acting ability. And I think that's when people started to take me seriously as an actor. So it'd be that show, Luke Cage.
You have to be excited that your new series, Johnson, on Bounce TV was renewed for a second season, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about that. Johnson was an incredible experience for me. I'm an elite actor on the show and also an executive producer and a showrunner. So it was a lot of responsibility, which is right up my alley. It's almost like, you know, I had a chance to kind of relive my football days and be a captain again. I was in It wasn't just a guest star role on one scene or one episode or a few episodes on the show. It was literally my show and my producer partner, Deji LeRae. It was our show. And we were in charge of everything. I mean, from the budget to casting to locations to the scripts to who the directors are to selecting the music. I mean, all decisions went through us, and that was great. It was just great to be able to have your fingerprint all over a TV show, and then for the people to respond to it so well, and for the content to resonate with people, and then to get renewed for season two before the first season even ended. That's a dream in Hollywood for a showrunner and an executive producer.
Tell us a little bit about what the show is about.
Yeah, so Johnson is about four black men that live in Atlanta. They've been friends for over 20 years since grade school, and they've kind of, you know, ventured out in the world, and now they have their own personal lives and personal situations and personal conflicts that they're dealing with. And the purpose of the show was to create a little more balance in Hollywood in regards to just how black men are portrayed. I think in a lot of shows and projects, we're portrayed as kind of one-dimensional, and, you know, we just didn't see balance. And so this show gave us an opportunity to show how we see the world in these specific, you know, life situations, whether it's marriage, whether it's, you know, being in corporate America, whether it's, you know, being in an interracial relationship, what that may look like, you know, dating. There's just so many different elements of black men's lives that I think are really, really misunderstood. So we wanted to provide an opportunity for people to kind of get an inside look at some of the ways that, you know, we kind of go about our lives and some of the things that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So it's a really fun show. It's a provocative show, but it's very honest. And I think anyone, regardless of what culture you come from, can watch this and be entertained and be enlightened and be educated as well on certain things that you may not even know.
Chris?
Yeah, I can't wait to actually see that. You're right. The stereotypes that are out there, it's, you know, either running a criminal enterprise or playing a background character. And it sounds, I can't wait to watch this show. Where can people watch the first season and catch up and get ready for season two?
Yeah. You can actually download this app, Brown Sugar, and all 10 episodes of Johnson, 30-minute episodes apiece, they're all there. So you can download the app, just scroll to Johnson, and all 10 episodes will be there. It's a really fun show. So, like I said, it's provocative in regards to the conversations and honesty, but it's very enlightening, and it's one of those shows that I think if you watch it, it'll definitely give you a different perspective, and because that's what life is. It's about perspectives, and it's about learning other people's experiences and appreciating other people's experiences. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're all here together, you know, and, you know, we have so many gifts that we can teach each other and give to each other. But you have to kind of sometimes take the time to actually look into someone else's perspective first before you can see the value in it. And I think this show does that from a black male perspective. You can download the Brown Sugar app and all 10 episodes are there.
It's very cool. We'll do that. I'm just kind of waiting to see standing in the grocery store line to see you on one of those TV entertainment scandal magazine.
I hope you don't see me on the cover of one of those. If I'm in the back, maybe that might be okay, but definitely not on the cover. Listen, I have a show as well that actually the trailer just was released yesterday called True Story that I have a role in. I play a detective in this show with Kevin Hart and Wesley Snipes. So it's a Netflix show that airs November 25th around Thanksgiving.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool show. It's based off a true story. And so the trailer is out. You can see it on YouTube. It's online. The show is entitled True Story. I didn't even know that the trailer came out yesterday until on Twitter, certain people said, "Hey, they took screenshots. Is this you? Are you in this?" I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of forgot that I did it, because in this business, you're always moving to the next project. And it's similar to football. It's like, you know, you win a game. Okay, cool. Next game. You lose a game. Okay, we got to do better. Next game. It's the same thing in this business. You film a project, next. You film a project, next. You film a project, next. So, that show will be out November 25th. I'm also in a Christmas movie that I filmed earlier this year that will air in December on TV One. And I was really, really excited about that. I'm not a big holiday person, because the majority of the time during holidays, I was playing football, whether it was Thanksgiving or Christmas, and even my birthday was always during training camp, so I never really had a chance to hang out. So even though I'm not a big holiday guy, my mother loves Christmas, and so she's always watching those Hallmark Christmas movies and Lifetime Christmas movies. So I'm really excited about this one, because she gets a chance to see me in a Christmas movie. It's a really fun movie called Almost Christmas, and that'll be out in December on TV One. So I have a couple of other projects coming up, as well as we're going into pre-production on Johnson, my TV show, season 2, in January. So things are moving. Things are moving pretty fast.
You're a busy man, I tell you.
Yeah.
Chris, you got anything else?
No, I just want to say thanks, Thomas. This has been a pleasure and an honor to talk with you and learn more. My first UVA football jersey I ever bought was a number 6 jersey.
Wow.
Big fan. Now I can have them complete the circle. So thanks so much.
Thank you. No, thank you, Chris. It's great talking to you and meeting you. I listen to you guys' show. You have a great show. Jerry is like family to me. I've known Jerry pretty much since high school. And Jerry has always been insightful. I don't know anyone else that loves Virginia football more than Jerry. He's been a huge part of my career and a huge part of my post career and a huge part of my life, my family's life. So I'm always grateful for Jerry and having the opportunity to come on any platform that he has. So thanks for having me, Chris. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Yeah. And say hello to Betty, your mom. She was really kind to me when you were being recruited, and a lot of people would call your house and she'd tell them to kind of leave her alone. But she was always nice to me. Kept me abreast of what was going on. So give her a kiss for me.
I definitely will. Her and I'll tell my father as well. I'll let both of them know. They know that I'm doing this podcast. Like I said, my dad, he watches those UVA games. And, you know, I might not be able to catch it, but we're on the phone. And he's giving me the play-by-play, and I feel like he's right on the sidelines. You know, he's still got the same energy for the games. And you know, we love watching UVA sports, you know. And it's really, really fun, because my three younger sisters went there. We all have similar experiences and similar friends. And, we all have this sense of pride. You know, we're from Virginia. We went to UVA. It's been a really cool experience. And even this far out, you know, this far removed from playing UVA, anytime I see the V with the Sabres and I see Scott Stadium, it just automatically takes me back to that time, the best times of my life were at UVA. So anytime I can talk about Virginia football, I'm all in.
Thank you for listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Get the latest on the Hoos, basketball, football, and more online at jerryratcliffe.com or at AugustaFreePress.com.